Welcome to the Real Estate Syndication Show. Whether you are a seasoned investor or building a new real estate business, this is the show for you. Whitney Sewell talks to top experts in the business. Our goal is to help you master real estate syndication. And now your host, Whitney Sewell.
This is your daily real estate syndication show. I'm your host, Whitney Sewell. Today, our guest is Scott Williams. Thanks for being on the show, Scott.
Thanks for having me, Whitney.
Scott is a managing director of commercial real estate debt and equity at Align Capital, LLC, based in Greenville, South Carolina. Works with a lot of real estate syndicators across multiple property types with some emphasis in multifamily just due to the market activity in that sector, although they're very bullish on several other property types as well. He has a deep credit background, having underwritten and closed over $2 billion in a credit capacity. This credit experience makes them extremely effective at working with syndicators. They say working with them is like buying a car from a mechanic, not a car salesman.
That's it.
Scott, thanks again for being on the show. Tell the listeners a little bit more about just who you are, what you do, what your focus is, and let's dive into how we get a loan and how that process works in this business.
Sure thing. Align Capital is based in Greenville, South Carolina, like you mentioned. We're a mortgage banking firm. Majority of the Southeast. We cover the Southeast really well. We'll go out of market on deals we know and borrowers we know. But truly, our value add is that we know how the cars are built, like we mentioned in that tagline. And so when you're working on us with a loan, it's less of a sales tactic and more of an education process. And that's kind of our value add in the space. And because of that, we tend to work really well with syndicators. And I'd say overall, kind of a value add or an offering that our group has is that we work really well with getting syndicators through the institutional lending process, maybe for their first time, just because it is a little rigorous. Institutional lending doesn't line up incredibly well with the syndication side of the business sometimes, which is a bit surprising just based on how much volume of deals is syndicated.
Great. I really want you to teach us how the car is built, and I want us to go through some of those and just helping the syndicator that's listening to get through the lending process. So I guess, you know, where should we start? Talk to the syndicator who is, maybe they're looking at deals right now. Maybe they haven't done a syndication yet. They're experienced in multifamily, but they're looking to get their first syndication maybe in the next few months. Help us in that process. And what do we need to be thinking about or doing?
Yeah, sure. So I'll speak from the debt side a little bit more. So we do have an equity platform offering, but we actually don't. That is more of kind of an institutional equity offering for larger deals, whereas syndicators are typically raising the equity themselves and then looking for the debt. But like I mentioned, the institutional lending world does not love kind of the syndication world in some senses. And so some things we want syndicators to be careful of is you never want to hide or not disclose anything to a lender, but I wouldn't just up and announce yourself as a syndicator. And the reason for that is a lot of times they view that as, hey, this is somebody putting a deal together and getting everybody else's money put in the deal. And maybe they don't have any money in the deal. And so then they view that as not having skin in the game. And that's a phrase that a lot of people hear. And more so than low leverage or high coverage or whatever a deal may be, lenders always want a syndicator to have skin in the game. And so we have several clients that go through the deal process with zero equity coming in, having raised all of the equity. And we view it very differently, right? Because in our opinion, syndicators are typically venturing out a full-time capacity to do this, and their livelihood is based on being a real estate professional and putting these deals together. And we find that syndicators truly have the best intentions at heart, that they're trying to provide passive income to the market while also creating an opportunity for themselves. And being that it's their full-time job, or even if they're just trying to venture into that as their full-time job, that's a ton of skin in the game. And there's a ton of pressure, and there's a ton of pressure to perform. And so we really understand that. And so I would say, you know, our group understanding the syndicator's intentions and their efforts, and then also kind of what the lenders want, trying to make sure that the information gets delivered in a way that it lines up with everybody's interest.
I appreciate you bringing that up as far as, oh, actually, you just mentioning don't announce yourself as a syndicator. I haven't heard anybody say that on the show before. That's interesting. But then also, just talking about how the syndicator has skin in the game. If he's doing this full time, he has skin in the game. Appreciate that, but go right ahead.
Yeah. One thing we get asked a lot of times is how much deal can I afford, even as a syndicator, even if you don't have any equity or hard cash leaving your pocket into the transaction. You know, what size deal should I qualify for? And so Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have pretty clear-cut guidelines. But like you mentioned earlier, we cover a lot of other property types too. And I would say that loosely, without holding me to the exact facts here, loosely, all institutional lenders have similar requirements. And a lot of times they want to see that the net worth of the combined loan guarantors, and so I say loan guarantors, even in a non-recourse loan, there is a carve-out guarantee. And so there is a guarantee, even though that it is non-recourse unless a carve-out is tripped. They want the combined net worth of those guarantors to equal the loan amount. And so if you were doing it by yourself as the only signer, you can look at your personal financial statement and say, there's my net worth. That's the loan amount I can apply for. And so therefore, typically that's backing into what size deal I can get. And then also the post-close liquidity requirement. And so we're actually writing a blog post on this right now to help educate the public on what actual requirements are post-close liquidity. Because it's very funny. What we've been very careful to do is catch people unannounced and calling mostly the production officers at these shops and asking them right off the cuff, what are the requirements? And we haven't gotten, out of about 10 or 12 interviews, we haven't gotten the same answer yet, even within similar loan programs.
For somebody that's never heard of that before, like post-close liquidity, like,
sure,
I guess take it down a little bit. What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. Post-close liquidity is the liquid assets, typically in the form of cash and cash equivalents, stocks or bonds, that you will have available after the acquisition is completed. And this is very important for syndicators. And this is kind of where I was going with don't announce yourself, because say a syndicator is taking a 20% split of a deal, right? 80% to the LP, 20% to the GP, even if there's partners inside the GP, right? The 20% partners have to have enough cash left over to equal what the requirement is. And within the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac small balance loan programs, which for Freddie Mac can go up to $7.5 million, for Fannie is expanded between five. Someone said 6.5 the other day. I'm sticking to 5 million, but call it a lot of deals that syndicators are looking at, 5 to 7.5 million in loan amount. That's 9 months of your loan payments or 9 months of your debt service after you close. What we get a lot from syndicators and what we're trying to have them not announce is that's after your money goes in to purchase the property and serve as the down payment. And what we don't want syndicators to do is tell the lender, oh, I'm not putting any cash into the deal, so everything on my balance sheet will be left after, right? Because then that goes back to the age-old question of, or the lender starts asking questions, what do you mean you don't have any cash going into the deal? There's not skin in the game. And it's not to say that your deal can't get done, because one thing that's unique about the capital markets, including Fannie and Freddie, is they just perceive it as a risk. And how do we compensate for risk in the investing world? We require higher return. And so your interest rate might be affected and your spread and things like that. And so to calculate your post-close liquidity and where you need to be careful is it's truly what you legally own as part of the ownership entity. So as I mentioned, the 20% to the syndicators, you need to account for the lender's going to look at 20% of that down payment coming out of your pocket. And then we need to make sure that you have the liquidity left over to serve those 9 months of loan payments for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, for several other lenders, life insurance companies, and several of the balance sheet groups we talked about, they want 10% of the loan amount, which is traditionally higher than 9 months of debt service. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in their conventional programs also want 10% of the loan amount. So that's a little bit more stringent requirement. So going back to helping coach syndicators on how much deal can I afford, even outside of the multifamily world, kind of need to be looking at this, our net worth for our combined signers or guarantors equals the loan amount. And then we have this post-close liquidity requirement that after what technically, just based on an org chart, legally what our down payment percentage should be, do we have cash left over after that to cover?
Wow. Okay. So now that's awesome. I haven't had many people talk about the post-close liquidity either. I appreciate you going into that. So I guess let's help the listener who's still just trying to figure all this out and be as prepared as possible. Mm-hmm. Now they understand some of the financial requirements before they go into this deal, or also maybe what not to say, saying that I'm a syndicator.
Sure.
How else can they be more prepared? I want them to be very educated about these types of loans and which one they need. What are some other issues that you see when new syndicators come to you looking for a loan? What's going to be some problems that are common that they have?
Sure. And this will not be a shameless to plug ourselves, but I truly love and believe in our industry and believe that brokers, especially for syndicators, are an incredibly useful tool. And so I think that brokers and syndicators work incredibly well together. One issue we see is syndicators overshop the market, and you start trying to get all of these different options, and you can almost give yourself analysis paralysis, right? Should I go with this bank direct? This broker got me this quote for this agency, and then I went direct over here and got another quote for this loan program over here. And having a broker and a true professional broker that's a finance professional that has experience will really help weed out a lot of the white noise and really boil down to, okay, give me your business plan in the full spectrum, and we can more or less weed out a lot of the loan programs that you should not be talking to or considering based on different parameters or metrics that might not fit well with your business plan. And then overshopping the market. So very interesting concept is the insurance world is very similar. We all roll up to a very few amount of true capital sources, writing the checks. You know, even in the CMBS world, there are a lot of providers, but at the end of the day, the capital markets are providing that pricing. When you overshop a deal and brokers start running into each other in the market, you can kind of run into problems that way. And so I would say trying to really dial into find an advisor, a broker who you trust that can really help you weed out a lot of the loan programs and then stick with that one so that you don't overshop the market. We had a client recently who we had been working on with a deal, and he wanted a second opinion and went direct to a lender. And ultimately it was great. Our quotes actually came back a little better. I say everyone rolls up to the same place. We actually were better than the direct lender on a deal just based on the group we had chosen to go through. But what happened is this borrower was ready to move forward. And when we went to request everything from the agency, it was actually a Fannie Mae loan. There were multiple people registered on this deal. And they said, hey, hit the pause button. You guys go figure out who has control of this deal and we'll get you an application then and get you our final answer. Well, all that did was cost the borrower an extra couple, 2 or 3 days, because we had to go back, get our exclusive agreement from them, take it to Fannie Mae, show them that we controlled the deal, and just then did they pick the deal up. So finding a good fit for you as a broker that serves an advisor and that you trust, and then having them help you as opposed to just overshopping the market. I tell a lot of people, equity and putting the deal together is more than a full-time job. So if you can have somebody take the debt side of the deal off your plate, that's a huge value add and will make you much more effective and efficient in the marketplace.
A minute ago, you mentioned briefly about our business plan. Can you elaborate on how our business plan might change the type of that we would get?
Yeah, absolutely. So I joke, and one thing I coach a lot of our clients on is you should definitely be worried about your interest rate. It is part of the consideration, but it's really third or fourth on the list of things we should be concerned about when we're going into a new loan. The number one thing we want to worry about is what's your business plan and what is your hold period and when do you need to return capital? Because institutional lending, for the most part, has stauncher prepayment penalties than maybe banks and credit unions do. And so that can come in the form of yield maintenance or defeasance, which if you're in a longer term loan, say a 7 or 10 year loan.
Explain that. What is that? I know a lot of people are like, what defeasance in the world is that?
Yeah. Defeasance and yield maintenance are very similar. They have small technical difficulties. Yield maintenance is the acceleration of the net present value of all of the future interest payments. And they use the nearest treasury rate as the discount rate. So I was a finance and real estate major, so I have my little financial calculator. I can type in net present value, my discount rate, and all the future cash flows.
Oh yeah, I can do that in my head.
Yeah, it is to you. So it's the acceleration. Think of it just very plain spoken. It's the acceleration of all your future interest payments. And so if you're 2 years into a 10-year loan, that's going to be brutal. Defeasance is slightly different in that you have to buy treasuries that will actually then replace your interest payments to the investor. So that once you close the loan, the people that bought the cash flows from your loan continue to get paid for the life of the loan. There is a technical difference, but they both hurt about the same. And so as you can imagine, if you're 2 years into a 10-year loan and need to make all the rest of your interest payments when you go to do something in the short term, that's going to be incredibly high for a prepayment penalty. If it's a short-term value add or light value add that you think you can flip out of the property in our first few years on, we really need to understand that on the front end. And maybe it's a bank loan because of that, due to lower prepayment penalties or more prepayment flexibility, or maybe it's a bridge loan, or maybe we're, instead of going after a 10-year fixed rate, we'll go after a 5-year fixed rate with the same loan program, just because the prepayment penalty will be much less.
Nice. Go ahead. You were talking a minute ago about, you went into business plan, the hold time, and obviously need to know when you need to return capital. But go ahead.
Yeah. And I would think, is it a value add property? How heavy is your reno? The majority of the time in permanent style loans that we're underwriting to their current kind of stabilized level and expecting them to kind of hold there and doing a long-term fixed rate, a lot of times we get asked, hey, can we add our CapEx dollars into this loan amount? The answer is typically there are some circumstances where we can go a little above the purchase price if the appraisal supports it. But if you're planning a heavy value add, even if the deal's already cash flowing and you're saying, hey, we're going to go and put in $10,000 a unit and up these rents really well, that may be a perfectly viable business plan, but that's going to dictate what loan you're going to want to go into on the front. So is it a stabilized hold? Is it a value add? Is that value add light reno? Is it heavy reno? Is it more of a management play? And then when do you need to return your capital? When are you telling your investors, hey, I'll get you your money back? All items we need to understand and on the front end and really dictate which loan program you should be going into.
That's some great advice right there. At least helping us think about that when we're underwriting some properties, or at least thinking about, okay, I hear a lot of people now, you know, obviously getting like 10-year debt because we don't know what the market's going to do, right? When it gets trying to sell or needing to sell and can't. If I need to sell, or if I tried to sell 3 years into a 10-year loan and I had the defeasance or something like that, I was going to have to pay. I mean, that could be a deal breaker as well.
Yeah. And so one other thing is have a business plan. Don't feel stuck to it. We have a lot of clients, and especially recent years, that they set out with a long-term hold business plan, but market got really hot in the past 2 years, right? And so we saw scenarios where they could sell and generate such an incredible return that it didn't make sense to continue to hold just because they were in a long-term loan. And so make sure that although you have a business plan and you picked the loan best suited for what you thought it was going to be, always build what I call trapdoors. Typical trapdoors in long-term loans are they assumable? If I go to sell this, can a buyer come in and take over this loan? So that's a trapdoor that you wouldn't have to pay off the prepayment penalty if you look to sell your property. You would just need the buyer to come in and take your loan. But you would also need to consider, okay, if my loan is only 65 or 70% of the purchase price they're coming in and they were expecting 75 or 80% of loan amount, well, they can't get any more loan. Maybe my price has to come down a little, but I'm still seeing this great gain. Having trapdoors with loan assumptions being one of the biggest ones is super helpful.
Trapdoors. Okay.
Build your trapdoors.
Interesting. And that's something you would be working with us on, I'm sure. If we said, okay, Scott, it's going to be a 5-year hold period, this is where we feel like we need to be, and you're going to help us really think through that exit.
Yep.
Be most prepared for that exit.
So they say in business, you know, look at the end or look at the breakup when you get started. That's definitely something we want to consider throughout the whole process is what's the business plan and what are our potential exits, and really trying to help decide how those go best.
Yeah. So anything else as far as the listener who's just getting started, maybe they're fixing to call you and it's first time talking to somebody in your shoes, talking about a loan, or what's going to help them to stand out above everybody else that's calling you trying to get into this business or getting a loan?
Yeah, I would say do as much research as you can independently on how best to underwrite a deal. We are more than happy to help coach clients through how to underwrite a deal and give them best practices. We can't have every client and every person in the world out there just forwarding us OMs. Hey, does this deal work? Does this deal work? Does this deal work? So the clients that we really take seriously, even if we disagree with some of their underwriting, but it looks like they come to us, they've looked at the historicals, they come to us with a budget, and they have reasons for how they've underwritten and why. And so if you've given a shot at how to best underwrite it, we'll give you great feedback on where we kind of disagree and why, and maybe sometimes we're wrong. It's really funny. Lenders and debt guys don't think like equity guys a lot of time. And our pro forma, a broker's pro forma and a lender's pro forma, is never how do they expect a property to actually operate. And so when people call me to help them with a pro forma, been in the business long enough to now where I can help them with their true, how will this deal operate? But my underwriting and a lender's underwriting is, it's a mix of how is this deal going to perform and what's the worst case scenario for this deal? How would this deal operate if the lender had to take over is really how they look at it. And so realistic underwriting and coming to us with some effort put into the underwriting is where we really get excited and start to take folks seriously.
What's the hardest part for a syndicator, to get a loan? What's the most difficult part that you've seen, or maybe the place that they fail the most in getting debt for their property?
We've been very fortunate. So in 2017, we had 100% close rate on deals under application. And in 2018, we only had one deal that didn't close that went under app. And that was because of a seller's title issue that was no fault of the lender or the borrower. Earnest money was returned, something out of everyone's control. If we are going to start a deal, we're very thorough on the front end because we hate retrades. We are retraded very infrequently. And when a lender retrades a client of ours and we're involved, they will know about it for the rest of their careers because we try to really warn off those things on the front end. If we're taking on a deal, we don't typically see a lot of failures. There's a lot of handholding. Just the amount of forms and the proper documentation of those forms and the way things need to be presented are probably the most difficult. But that's also where firms like ours shine, other brokerage groups out there shine that are great at it. We call our service a white glove service offering. We want as little touch from the lender to the borrower as possible. And so if you sign up a loan and there's 100 phone calls that have to take place in between that application and the closing, we try to take 96 of those calls for you. And we try to fill out the forms because we know how to properly fill out the forms. And then we have you review and execute. And so I would say setting yourself up for success is finding a partner that really knows the system and serves as a true advisor as opposed to maybe someone that's just transactional and gets you a term sheet and then says, hey, great, got you a term sheet, I'll get paid at closing, and then wishes you the best of the luck with the lender. That's not somebody you're going to want to work with again.
I like that. And changing, is there a way that you all recently improved your business that we could all apply to ours?
Way we've improved our business. Very interesting. This is part of how we're looking to improve our business. We have been extremely successful growing organically with no marketing effort historically. And the syndication market is a really kind of grassroots effort, it seems like. And it's done by a lot of the podcasters and coaches and folks giving great information out there. And so we've tried to find these outlets to educate people through. And so I would say that garnering business through education, and that applies to syndicators, that if you're not asking your investors for money and showing them because you'll get this return, but educating them as to here's how this deal will take place and here's how your return will be generated. We've just found that promoting business through education and educational marketing is really starting to pay dividends. And that's why we're excited to be speaking with you, because you have such a great platform and tremendous amount of followers. And part of us wanting to come on here was kind of do what we've done here, is try to just impart some of the knowledge that I've been blessed to get just from my background to help educate the market as a whole.
Yeah, appreciate it as well. Scott, what's the number one thing that's contributed to your success?
I think about this a lot because I'm like, what am I going to say if I get that question asked? And unfortunately, I have the boringest answer of it's just been a lot of hard work. I had a coach in high school that would always start our practices at 5:30 or 6 in the morning. He said, if you're practicing while your opponents are sleeping, if you're out there outworking the next guy, in real estate, truly, real estate and transactional businesses in general, a lot of times, if you're just willing to outwork somebody else, it will typically pay off in your benefit. And I wish that wasn't my advice because it sounds boring and it sounds like everybody shouldn't be hitting happy hour right now. But once we finish this up, I'm going to go back to work for a couple hours and see if we can serve our clients.
I can relate. I think it may not be like some big fancy answer, but it's truth. You've got to be willing to put in more hours than anybody else.
That's it.
Makes so much sense. And how do you like to give back?
How do we like to give back? So we have a couple of philanthropies that are a part of. We actually have a client whose daughter has this very unique handicap or terminal disease, if you will. And he's got a great nonprofit and we are sponsoring a large gala for that. And then in terms of just trying to educate the community and being a part of some of the local charities, my wife is actually a social worker. And so she's a social worker at our hospital system here. And she was formerly at a hospice program. And so no shortage of charities and no shortages ways for her to let me realize that giving back and being part of the community is incredibly important. That's for sure.
Awesome. Scott, you've provided just great value to our listeners, I know, and many things that I haven't heard before or heard people say on the show anyway. And it's great. And tell the listener, though, how they can learn more about you and get in touch with you.
Yeah. So we are happy to discuss anything deal-wise with anybody. Happy to help you with some of the pre-flighting deals and what deals work and get you through that institutional lending process for the first time. And so if you have any questions, feel free to reach out anytime. Our website is just www.alinecapital.com. Align is A-L-I-N-E. We've got our phone number on there, which is 864-729-3990. And then our emails are on the website as well. And feel free to reach out anytime. I joke, I tell people, I say, there is a such thing as a dumb question. It's the question you already knew the answer to and asked anyway. If you don't know the answer, we work with a lot of newcomers and a lot of beginners. We're happy to help anybody.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Scott, for putting that out there and offering that to the listeners. I hope the listeners will join us again tomorrow. And I hope you're sharing the show. And I hope you'll join us on the Facebook group, the Real Estate Syndication Show, so we can all learn and grow from experts like Scott, and go to LifeBridge Capital and connect with me, and we will talk to each of you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Real Estate Syndication Show, brought to you by LifeBridge Capital. LifeBridge Capital works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate, while also donating 50% of its profits to assist parents who are committing to adoption. LifeBridge Capital, making a difference, one investor and one child at a time. Connect online at www.lifebridgecapital.com for free material and videos to further your success.